Okay, let's move to our time certain item 368.
Accept report from Matrix Consulting Group on the Portland Police Bureau staffing study.
Thank you. Well, let me call up Chief O'Day and Richard Brady from Matrix Consulting to talk about this report. I just want to frame this briefly. This is just going to be a presentation of the report in what's obviously a busy council session this week. There'll be a little bit of time for public feedback, but this is mainly a presentation. I just want to thank the team for a comprehensive evaluation of both our span of control and our staffing levels in the Police Bureau. This was really in response to a budget note from the council in our 2013-14 budget. So the questions they're going to address here in summary, and of course a significant document to back it up, is are we focusing our resources in the right areas? Do we have the right ratios of management to direct service folks in the Bureau? Other feedback on how our management systems operate in the Bureau. So what have we learned from this careful inquiry into the structure and workforce size in the various tiers within the Police Bureau, and how can we make it better? So with that, I'll turn it over to the Chief and his team.
Here, let me supplement the record with one thing, because it actually, the original genesis was the span of control report
right. That
you asked Steve and me to do. And out of that came some questions about span of control and supervisor to employee ratio. And the next iteration was, I think it was the then chief, who said, we want to do an independent study to look at this. And there was some disagreement about methodology. So we were pleased to support that. And a lot of good has come out of that original assignment the mayor made, where he asked number of us to pair up and do things, and the span of control, I think, is an example.
Yeah, it's good work.
So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Chief O'Day, or?
Yeah, I'll have Richard start first with his presentation, and I'll follow him.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I've gotten the message pretty clearly that you've got a crowded agenda. So we've got a 300-page report and 92 recommendations, and I'll try not to talk too fast. But let me walk you through this study, and I think some of the more important things that we came up with. First of all, let me remind you what our scope of work was. It was a comprehensive management, staffing, and operations study to look at answering some important questions. First of all, is the Police Bureau providing the levels of service that this community expects, needs, and has historically received? Do you have the right number of people to do that? Are they managed and organized effectively in order to do that? Most of our analysis was from the ground up, looking very carefully at workload and service levels, but we also compared you to best practices and came up with this report that has a summary of everything that we did in this study. How we got here was really intensive. We worked for several months just doing field work. We started in the middle of last summer. And we started with extensive interviews of staff, management staff, supervisory staff, but many line staff. In all, we had over 200 interviews, individual interviews of staff within this. And that input was important enough for us where we supplemented that with an anonymous employee survey to which about 60% of the employees responded, with 600-plus responses. The input wasn't everything that we needed to do a study like this, where there's almost as many numbers as there are words. So we collected a lot of data as well, quantifying workloads in every function, service levels, work practices, and things like that. And I think the analysis reflects that empirical, that really detailed kind of approach. Throughout this process, we had a parallel reporting relationship, extensively meeting with the Bureau command staff to review facts and issues and alternatives. But we also had a broadly based project steering committee that we met with, particularly the second half of the study, to review what we were coming up with. You know, a report like this necessarily focuses on the improvement needs, especially when we're talking about organization and management and operational types of things. And sometimes the more positive things get lost. And so I wanted to take a couple seconds just to talk about the positive things that we found as we went through this. First of all, it's important to stress that in a number of indicators that we examine in field operations and investigations and even in internal operations, there are high levels of service being provided to the community as well as internally, and we can talk about that more as we go through this. Secondly, there's been a lot of external scrutiny of the Bureau in the last couple of years. most notably the Department of Justice. And I think the thing I've said about this whole process that I think is true is that, unlike a lot of cities in the country, that many of which we work with, the department isn't just responding to what DOJ tells them to do. They are proactively meeting and exceeding what DOJ is coming up with requirements, and I think that's a really important distinction. Deployments in general in the operations branch and field services generally balance the proactive and the reactive kind of workloads, which is a very important thing in law enforcement. You're not going to be effective as a police agency by responding to calls for service. You're going to be effective by doing something about the root causes of crime. And as you'll see as we go through this, they've got high levels of proactivity in patrol, and they use it. Investigative clearance rates are high, and that's a positive thing as well. Not just multi-jurisdictional task force, but other ways of coordinating and cooperating with other justice agencies, schools, other health and human service agencies is really high here. And I think that's an effective part of community policing today, to recognize that you can't do it all and you need to partner with other kinds of agencies in the community. So as I said, in support functions generally meet both internal, in terms of supporting police officers, and external, supporting the community in the way they interact. Some of the key themes run through this report is, I wanted to stress, because it runs through all of the recommendations that we've made here. Number one is that while this is a very community-oriented bureau, more needs to be done to cement that community focus. And I think that is summarized in the use of the word formal. I think there needs to be more formal approaches of figuring out what the problems are in the community, deploying people, even managers, to address those problems and to create those ties and to make them accountable for it. And that's something that we stress, even in a staffing study, is an important part of the management processes here. While the Bureau is taking a lot of steps to increase the use of data, creating an intelligence-led policing effort, and they've always had a strong data orientation, the demands of the external focus and what we're asking the Bureau to do will increase that need, and they need help to do it. It's not as easy as a police officer in the field pushing a function key and finding out everything he or she needs to know about the problems out in the community. That takes help, and that's an important part of several of the recommendations we made. Thirdly, more flexibility is needed in the Bureau, wherever we're looking, but especially in operations and investigations, that you need to have the performance management plan in place, the way to look at it, and the ability to move people around, because problems are going to change every year. They're changing right now. They've changed just since we've submitted the draft report, and you need to be nimble, and that's what a modern department needs to be. Management consistency is critical. It's something we found in the employee survey. The message is sometimes not consistently delivered throughout the organization and possibly externally as well. So the new management team needs to create a consistent message and find some mechanisms to make sure everyone within the department is on the same page. Operations, the patrol, obviously the largest part of the department, and an awful lot of our time and an awful lot of this report is dedicated to that. Some really important findings associated with this. First of all, the workload and the proactive abilities in field operations are relatively evenly distributed. There's the East Precinct has more workload than the other precincts, but at the beat level, beat officers are handling within a fairly narrow range the same amount of workload, which means they all have the same amount of ability to be proactive. And that's important here. It's important everywhere. But here, you've got more proactive time than we typically see in larger cities. Mm-hmm. It's over 50% of your time. Many of our clients for agencies this size are struggling to get 35 or 40%. Mm-hmm. So you've got this luxury. The good thing is that this proactive time is being used. You're generating a lot of proactive activity and addressing problems in the community. But again, the use of data, supervisory oversight, and making people accountable so that this is not randomly generated activity, it's directed toward problems in the community, is a need that needs to be made. And this needs to be an ongoing kind of process, reviewed, tracked, et cetera, so that people are redeployed, redirected as necessary. And the new intelligence-led policing and other efforts are going to enhance that and help support that. We looked at the three precincts. You used to have more precincts, 4 or 5 precincts in the past. We think 3 is appropriate now. We think it's appropriate for span of control reasons. We think it's appropriate for community access is not jeopardized with 3. And the cost of additional command and administrative personnel outweigh the benefits of increasing the number of precincts at this time. In special operations, there are a couple of recommendations we make. Need to redeploy some traffic personnel so weekend coverage is enhanced. You need some additional canine capabilities. School resources officers. You don't have enough school resources officers for the high schools you have at a minimum. You need to have a school resources officer in each high school. That's, I think, an important aspect today, both from the perspective of working with school administrators, teachers, parents, and students programmatically, but also to on calls and other kinds of activity. We think that the cadets and the reserves in the Bureau are an important asset, a little underutilized in some respects. We think you need to develop a process in-house to increase their capacity and their use within the department. Investigation. So we went through a thorough process of looking at the case management system and how cases were assigned to these different investigative units. And there's a lot of pages in there that result of moving people around. It may seem like we're just moving people around, but it's based on, for an effective case management system, which you generally have, although we make some other recommendations to improve it, what are the effective caseloads so that you're spending enough time in investigations? And overall, you're a little deficient, but in spite of moving people around. But more significantly, you've got some major gaps that you typically don't see in larger police departments today. You don't have an auto theft unit. More importantly, I think, you don't have a computer crimes unit. And it's not just handling cases that are computer-oriented in general or specifically, but also as a case assistant to other crimes, child abuse, other types of crimes for which computers are in use today, and you don't really have the capacity you need to do that investigations. We think you need to return to something like the district investigative efforts where generalist investigators are centrally managed but decentralized in terms of their responsibility so that relatively minor crimes, especially property crimes, get some sort of follow-up. And that can be neglected now, even though patrol tries to help out. I think one of the principal recommendations in this report, and it gets to this issue of proactivity and coordination of services, is to reorganize what we're calling the proactive investigative units. Right now, you've got gangs, which is a large driver of organized criminal activity in the city as that relates to prostitution, as it relates to drugs, as it relates to other forms of human trafficking. And those are in different parts of the Bureau right now, 4 different parts of the Bureau. We think that they should be in one part of the Bureau so that the same suspects can be more regularly worked by common detectives in a single system, and that the assignments can switch over time depending on what the problems are. So we think that the criminal activity and the criminals need to be better coordinated in terms of how you're working that. Again, support can't happen without people who can support personnel, so we're recommending a crime analyst to help with case research, case enhancement, and things like this. Over time, we think there's an opportunity to civilianize the criminalists, the field evidence collection personnel. That's a growing area. It's becoming the norm even in larger organizations, and it's not just a cost issue, but it's a way of finding employees who this is what they want to do, and they want to spend a career in forensics. Services branch, the last branch. Several support management positions should be civilianized relating to fleet and records. Civilianization was something that we looked at throughout the organization. We think that the follow-up through the strategic planning process from all these various directions that it's coming from needs to have some sort of facilitator to help coordinate that and to help develop a message that can be post-strategic plan process generated to the whole community as well as internally within the Bureau. You're going through the regional records management process. It's difficult to tell at this time what your needs are going to be. I don't think they're going to be greater, but they're going to be for different kinds of records management personnel to help you analyze and quality control information coming from the new records management approach that you've got. We've recommended three additional analyst positions, and I think there's been some budget adjustment since we did this report and today. But we think that because of the intensive demands and support required from the post-DOJ environment, you're going to need two analysts to help support that in terms of reporting. But another analyst is needed to help the transition to an intelligence-led policing effort within the Bureau. Lastly, organization and management issues. We looked at the overall structure within the department and looked specifically at some span of control issues and allocation of functions. But we get back and start out with some of these management kinds of issues that accountability is critical for the Bureau at this point in time, well, for all points in time. But because of the scrutiny, because of the visibility, it's really important now. Because of that, because of the work it takes, your current rank structure is appropriate. And we looked at that pretty thoroughly. In terms of responsiveness to community and making sure that we've got performance plans in place for the department, your current rank structure in terms of span of control, layers of the organization, et cetera, are effective. Most spans of control for mid-level managers are effective as well. If you assume that a span of control isn't just numbers of reports, it's also responsibilities. So I'm thinking of positions like adjutants that they have for each of the branches and for the chief are important functions that have because they've got a lot of responsibilities in terms of administrating what's going on within each of those branches within the organization. Some spans of control are too low, and we've recommended a couple positions being eliminated, traffic being most notably. At the top, though, the span of control is too wide, and we think that you should consider a fourth branch to split off the operational support side from operations. If you don't do that, we've recommended that the operational support things go to patrol to increase the coordination between patrol and operational support things, like patrol, SWAT, things like that. But we think that that would make it way too wide, so we recommended splitting that off. The system of rotations, that's something we looked at toward the end of this study because the more we heard about transfers and reassignments within the department, the bigger an issue it was. Right now, quite often personnel management personnel can be rotated too frequently to be effective. Sometimes it's weeks or months, and it's going to take a couple years, especially in many of these specialty positions, to get good at what you're doing and to be effective as a supervisor and manager. So we think that accepting exceptional circumstances, that rotation should be a two-year minimum within the department bureau. Lastly, with a new chief, a new command staff, and all these other things that are going on, some team-building process that makes sure that the results of these directions that you're implementing through this process and for other processes that you've gone through in the last year is coordinated and transmitted consistently internally into the community. So I don't think I can talk any faster than that, but that is the report.
That was both clear and swift. Let me ask you a couple questions before I turn it over to the chief and Captain Scruggs, and maybe they can respond too. One thing I haven't spotted yet, it may be in the body of the report, and I didn't spot it, and that is the assignment of responsibility to top managers, not just whether we should have a fourth branch or not, but are we rightly configured in terms of what they do? This got distorted for a while in Portland because for a while we had this artifact of having managers represented by a union. We went to the Employment Relations Board and got that clarified that lieutenants and below are represented and captains and above aren't.
Right.
Now that that's cleared up, are we assigning the right responsibilities to those captains and commanders and assistant chiefs, in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I think that falls in a number of different ways. I mentioned the adjutant structure that you have here. Yeah. And departments this size tend to have that kind of position because otherwise top managers within the organization are too bogged down with administrative things relating to scheduling and transfers and other kinds of administrative things, even down to insurance and things like that, and not being able to function effectively at that level to figure out whether you're achieving your goals, your service priorities, et cetera. Lower down in the organization, there were a number of one-over-one kind of reporting relationships, which is a red flag for us. And we looked at several of those, and in traffic we recommended not. We looked at, in each of the precincts, there's one-over-one reporting relationships between commanders and captains, which we thought very seriously about until we understood better what they're trying to achieve here, and that we're trying to get operations management effectively covered at one level and making sure that we've freed somebody to make sure it's working and to effectively work with the community. So we think the allocations or responsibilities are generally where you should be in a department this size and this complex, although we made some recommendations to change both roles as well as allocation of managers,
okay,
staff.
I'll look at those. Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay.
I have one question, Mayor. One of the early slides you had, you talked a little bit about the way the Bureau interacts with the community.
Yeah.
And that relationship. And, of course, one of the questions that comes up is, how do you measure that? Despite our best efforts, we don't hear from, whatever, 90-something percent of the people right. that the chief serves. So how do comparable bureaus measure that, and what are the key factors that you look to?
So again, I get back to that the word of formality, and so it's not just reaching out and going to meetings, because as important as that is for the contact, it doesn't result in something that can be a plan for how you use your resources to meet whatever problems are identified out there. So the strategic planning process that we talk about needs to incorporate and create a process such as that, so that you're working with the community to come up with specific programs and deployments and strategies to address problems that are raised. In no community you're going to get 90% or 80% or even 9% to be active participants in that. But you need to maximize that through public information and for involvement and use leveraging community groups to get as much information as possible. But the important part is from, because you've got such a relatively large and very diverse city, is to converting what you're hearing into plans to address the concerns that people have in the community, whether they're deployment things, visibility things, whether they're addressing specific problems that may occur in one part of the city and not many others, things such as that.
Great. Good questions?
Did you look at the mounted patrol? And is that reflected in the report as to whether the staffing of that is appropriate?
We did look at it. It is in the report, a very brief mention of it, and we're supporting it for the roles that it has here right now.
What kind of factors did you look at?
We looked at what their roles are and what they're being used for, mostly for special kinds of circumstances. We looked at the cost, and we looked at how they interrelate, how they coordinate with other units.
And did you look at the size of them, the number of officers assigned?
Yeah, we did.
That's appropriate?
It is. It's appropriate comparatively, first of all, but I think more importantly, it's appropriate for the size and the use that they have here.
Thank you.
And we did look at that seriously because we've recommended elimination in many cities we've worked with where you don't have the need as great as you do here.
Okay, thank you. Chief.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. And I'll not go line by line on these recommendations. I'll be pretty brief and over. I know your time's very precious right now. I do want to start off by thanking the Matrix Group for their extensive work on this project. I really appreciate the significant time that they spent with people within the Bureau and learning what we do and why we do some of the things we do. We do some things different, and I appreciate them taking the time to learn why we do that. And I also want to thank Captain John Scruggs for being our project manager on this, and for the members of our advisory group that included Commissioner Novick for their time commitment to this project. As you know, this project was directed out of the budget process last year and also as a part of the follow-on to the city span of control review. You know, for us in general, the staffing study supports kind of what most of us have felt since the loss of 55 positions in the budget before last. You know, with the loss of those positions that year, and that followed on after several other years of cuts, we had become really lean, and it really limited our ability to start addressing new issues or continuing to support for some of our needed specialized functions to the degree that we think that we needed to. You know, one of our coping strategies has been to have some of our positions that historically have been non-sworn to be sworn. You know, by having some sworn members in some of those positions, it allows us to use them double duty for other things when they're not doing their day job, such as supporting our overtime staffing, major mission support, and also the staffing of detached assignments. Of course, the real answer is to have the adequate staffing level and have, you know, non-sworn personnel working in non-sworn compatible jobs. We've become very practiced at moving resources around temporarily and being as nimble as possible. However, we still have gaps in our service, even with that. And some of our gaps in service just can't be addressed by moving resources. Emerging and significant issues like computer crime require specialized training and positions to really effectively address. We have a strong need for analysts. This includes both crime analysts and investigative analysts. These positions allow us to work more efficiently and effectively. And this is especially important during times of limited resources. And analysts are also a significant component for us in meeting the reporting needs of the Department of Justice settlement agreement and the reporting desires of the public. This year we've seen a significant increase in gang gun violence, and I've asked the Tactical Operations Division leadership and the Assistant Chiefs to work with their partners and to review what we may need to do differently regarding gang gun violence. I'm not sure as a community that we have the right amount of outreach, community engagement, the holistic approach, or Bureau resources invested in this problem that we may need. We've had almost three times the number of gang violence reduction team call-outs this year as compared to last. Another crime that is increasing rapidly is thefts from vehicles. We're up pretty significantly, about 30% from last year, and auto theft is also continuing to trend upward. We continue to try to be innovative within our existing resources whenever possible. This year we are piloting the concept of sector policing versus having individual district policing pieces. And this is in an attempt to be able to maximize our problem solving and community engagement capacity. Instead of having 20 or 25 individual districts being managed by single officers, we have divided the precinct into four separate sectors where teams of officers work. The hope is that this will maximize our efficiency, allow us to take all of our calls, and still allow for proactive and follow-up efforts like the walking beat that was so successful last year downtown and in the Hawthorne area, and do it all on a more cost-neutral basis within existing resources. Looking ahead, the Bureau is facing the possibility of significant retirements in the next 3 years. This will require more background investigators and recruiting positions, which we forfeited in years past when we stopped hiring. We knew we would need these positions back when we started hiring again, and that time and need is upon us. I think that the staffing study offers the opportunity to help us continue the conversation about right-sizing the police bureau. I think right-sizing the police bureau needs to be done by incorporating community expectations, the Department of Justice settlement agreement, and the mayor and commissioner's priorities. I thank you all for your time. I know this is a very busy time of year for you. I appreciate your thoughtful consideration around such an important issue, and know that I understand the tremendous challenges you face in balancing the competing needs of the city. Also know that we will continue to try to do the best that we can regardless of staffing levels, and we will try to never let a lack of resources limit our problem-solving creativity. Thank you.
Thank you. Captain Scruggs, anything else to add?
Mayor, no, I was just here to answer any questions.
Questions.
So, Mayor, we've gotten like the Cliff Notes version of this presentation, but truth is our time certain isn't until 3, so we do have...
We've got some time, and we have some folks that want to speak to us, but we do have some time to have some dialogue here. So, a couple questions.
So, Chief, big picture. There are a lot of very specific recommendations, and they are coded high, medium, and low priority in terms of suggested, you know, sequencing of implementation. Is it your intention, Chief, to prepare a brief report to Council specifically identifying those recommendations that you think we ought to be focused on earlier in the process and a rationale for that? Or how do you intend to take these recommendations and translate them into a priority list, a bucket list for the city?
Well, knowing we weren't going to be able to do that today, my hope was this could just be the start of the conversation, taking a look at here's what these outside recommendations are, and just me giving a brief overall. Here's where we're definitely short at. That format you suggested, I would be very happy to do. There's certainly some things that I think are important sooner rather than later. You know, the analyst needs are something that are just critical for us, especially around our Department of Justice needs there. And I feel very, very lacking around things like computer crime.
Why are we seeing an uptick in vehicle theft and break-ins?
That's a good question. We are looking, and it's also one of the reasons why we want and feel a need for more analysts work to help us. There's two kinds of analysts that we're looking for. One that can tell us on a much more real-time basis, you're getting car crawl break-ins, say, up in the Pearl, and be able to react better to that. And the other is looking at an investigative analyst. You know, for instance, this tremendous uptick in shootings that we've had on the gang team, we know we're having a whole bunch, but we don't know why. An investigative analyst can help us kind of connect those dots and maybe start being able to pin that down to, here's what you have going. You have this family fighting with this family.
And Chief, I was thinking when you're talking about break-ins and cars and things, I was also thinking about where I live. We've also had an uptick in home invasion, people breaking into homes and stealing stuff. And my assumption has been some of this is driven by drugs. People are breaking in, stealing things, raising cash, whatever. Is there some tool that we have where we can do a better job alerting people by neighborhood about the specific challenges they're facing and also get useful information upstream about the things you need to be more vigilant about? I'll give you an example. In my neighborhood, I think a lot of people, because it's pretty cohesive, they'll probably don't lock their front doors at night. A lot of people on my street don't lock their cars. You know, they're just rolling the dice, and all kinds of things. And I wonder, are there technologies or other things we can use to get advice and recommendations out to folks based on what the data you're seeing by neighborhood, sort of common sense things about do's and don'ts to deal with whatever uptick you're showing?
Oh, absolutely. When you look at there's great ways of combining analyst work with public information work, and even with the technologies we have like crime mapping, and be able to get that information accurately and get it out to folks.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, can I today, if I wanted to, go to a website, put in my zip code, and could I access that kind of information?
Right now, for us, you'd be really limited because our analyst capability right now is shifted from a lot of our crime analyst work to our Department of Justice analyst work. But we've had times in the past where we've been able to be much more real-time about that.
Yeah, and for example, you know, if I could punch in my zip code and find out that a lot of bikes have been stolen, cars have been broken into, those kinds of things, I mean, there is some common sense stuff the neighbors could do, like making sure there's a lock on their garage, making sure they're locking doors. It seems like every time we don't lock the car, someone takes advantage of that. And that's part of community policing, right? In giving us the information so that we help you upstream.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, when you really start putting together a whole system, you can look at things like the big increase in heroin use, driving a lot of property crime, being able to gather that information, being able to tie your social service partners into that as well.
Number of things here. I won't take a lot of time now because I want to make sure we hear from folks that want to speak, but I'm particularly intrigued by this recommendation about an organized crime division to sort of say, wait a minute, we're not just dealing with human trafficking, we're not just dealing with drugs, we're dealing with organized criminal enterprises that happen to have different commodities or specialties, if you will, that they're focused on. Just some quick reactions to that.
Yeah, that's a great one, and that's probably the one that I have thought about the most, both potentially for and against, and I'll tell you why. At first blush, that seems like a good logical connection to me that we can put one unit addressing all this. But here's my fear that we put all this work in together, and right now we've got this huge spike in gang violence. So I fear our focus would shift the bulk of those resources towards that, and in particular with things like human sex trafficking. You know, then you're going to drop off at that, and that, you know, that will suffer as a priority over the gang gun violence. Mm-hmm. And I go back to our time when we had all of our investigations in detectives, and you know what suffered, the family violence crime suffered until we were able to build that standalone unit that could prioritize those crimes. So I haven't said no to that, but it's one I'm putting thought into. Want to have a lot of internal conversation because the pro side is, you know, maybe you've got a lot more resources that can nimbly shift there. But I think particular things like sex trafficking are really hard crimes to stop investigating, then restart investigating, stop. I think I worry that that would suffer out of that.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that'll be an interesting discussion to continue. Yeah. I think I can see it both ways, just as you have articulated. But I understand why the recommendation. I think I understand why the recommendation was made. It makes sense.
And it's not just the shifting of resources; it's also the information.
Yeah.
And recognize that a lot of those activities, like human trafficking, are very complex, very time intensive, and you don't want to harm that.
And also interrelated.
Absolutely.
Yeah, gang violence and human trafficking are closely tied together.
Right, that's how they're making their money.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Other questions for the team?
I'm struck by the recommendations on the special emergency response team, and particularly the finding that the members of the CERT team require 500 hours of training annually. Mm-hmm. Is that normal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That's one of the reasons why we're saying that it should be a staffed unit, is because we're impacting other operations for the members that are involved in it.
Is it normal in police, if there were an emergency, a standing team, would they still need a quarter of their time to be spent in training?
Yes.
So it's not because they have other duties that they
right.
have to spend that many hours. It's because of the particular
training,
specialties and challenges of that work.
Right.
I don't understand why you would have to keep doing a quarter of your time on training once.
It's situational, and it's also changes in tactics. And
I think part of that conversation came out of the CERT team does a lot of our search warrants for us.
Right.
Those require pulling people to pre-plan those. You don't need the whole team to plan them, but you pull a small contingent. The except for the two sergeants, the entire CERT team works in a detached capacity. That means they're all patrol officers or detectives or doing some other job full-time. When they have a warning order to do a search warrant planning, they'll pull four or five people to come in and plan that mission. So I think part of that justification, when I remember the conversation before, was you're pulling these resources already from here and there, and then having to backfill those assignments on overtime to get this function done.
Right. So that does seem to make sense to me. I still, if they're working four 10-hour days, having the whole of one of those days be training every week, I mean, am I understanding, are you talking about training or planning the actual?
It's both.
Yeah. It is. Both specific skills training and pre-planning for this or that scenario?
Right.
Okay.
It seemed like having a specialized team that were going to do this, the search warrants, for example, would
right.
be.
Eventually, that some of the training would be on the job training,
right? Or that there's a standard protocol, or
and right. Yeah, no, that's worth exploring. Yeah.
Actually, one more question,
sure.
if I could, to our friend from Matrix. You've been looking at. There's a section here about best practices. You're comparing us some of our peer groups. Who are the key peer group comparators that you use for Portland, Oregon?
We were very careful not to do that. We're comparing you to best practices. We're comparing you to what is the best that you can be in law enforcement services, whether we're looking at deployment, management of operations, et cetera. So Portland's a pretty unique place, and we could compare you. We could come up with a list of communities, Seattle, others, but it's just not going to be Portland. So we are very careful in this bottom-up kind of approach not to give you too much top-down that results from what others do. So we've worked with a lot of those other communities. So some things work, and we test them out. But whether it's staffing comparisons or things like that, we just don't like to do that. I'd rather use the good ideas that agencies have.
So I get that best practices is the North Star, but wouldn't it be relevant to us as decision makers, especially in terms of resource allocation, to know whether anyone else is getting close to that best practice, or whether whether the national standard is a B and not an A?
Well, that's what we did in the study. What we didn't do, though, is give you a table that shows here's where you stand with other communities, because I think that's really misleading, and I don't want that to generate the recommendation. I want the recommendation for something like that to be based on what the level of service you've targeted here, how highly utilized people are at delivering, and whether they're managed and coordinated well.
Great. Thank you all. Let's take testimony, and then I'm sure we'll have some other comments towards the end. Thank you. Okay, who do we have signed up, please?
We have five people signed up.
Okay.
First three, please come on up, are Suzanne Hayden, Joe Walsh, and Steve Entwistle, Sr.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Suzanne Hayden. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Crime Commission. I'm also a Portland resident. And I want to thank you for commissioning this report to evaluate the Portland Police Bureau staffing, their business practices, and service levels to the community. I think this report is a good start to determine the right size for a police agency doing the type of work against what the community wants, a city of our size, using these objective benchmarking against other agencies and national best practices where they're available. I served on the Citizen Advisory Committee that was formed and met with the consultants Matrix and the Police Bureau to review the findings that the consultants had and also offer some feedback throughout. I want to provide a couple of comments on some key provisions in the 200-plus page report. I think the report accurately recognizes the many strengths that the men and women who serve as police officers in our community and their commitment to our community with really high levels of service, given the lean staffing levels that they have and the size and diversity of our community, the population that they serve. Many of the recommendations from the report have already been really evaluated strongly by the leadership and implemented. So that's a positive. One area where policing is different than other city bureaus and other careers is the time it takes to hire police officers. And I really want to point this out because the report indicates there should be a net increase of personnel in the bureau, both officers and civilian positions. Well, what's not maybe widely understood by the community is how long it takes to hire an officer, which includes recruitment, background checks, the mandatory state basic academy training, and just to make sure that it's a right fit, they are on an 18-month probationary period as well. So that process takes over 2 years. So what I want to point out to City Council is that throughout that period, police officers are retiring or leaving the Bureau. So when the Police Bureau suspends hiring or fails to fill positions that are vacant due to budget cuts, there's a drastic staffing implications for up to 3 years following that decision. And I believe that we really need to have a more stable and sustainable way to modulate the staffing of the Police Bureau, whether that's addressed by overhiring or rolling hiring. We just need to get ahead of that curve. Just a couple of other issues. Computer Crimes Unit, that's a significant gap. And we don't have any personnel attributed to that. And another area is the high school school resource officer positions. I think that is really an important upstream connection for our community. So, again, thank you for the leadership in commissioning this report. I think it gives a lot of really complex information to review and helps with strategic planning for the Bureau. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Walsh?
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. It's kind of interesting sitting here and wondering why we're under indictment from the Department of Justice. Everything sounds so wonderful. All we have to do is hire some more police officers and we can fix all our problems. The major problem in Portland right now is you have large sections of the community that does not trust your police department, and all the PR in the world is not going to work. There's got to be some heavy-duty lifting here. We attended a COAB meeting the other night, and for an hour and a half, we sat through a PR stunt that was put on, and the people were furious. So after all of this, after the Department of Justice came down, after the judge came down, after the appeals, after the wringing of hands and everybody trying to figure out what's going on, a couple of days ago, they did the same thing. After years of this stuff, You have a major problem. Keep the cops out of your schools, period. Keep them out. Figure out how you can make the school safe without having police in there. The police image is very special. If you have a security guard, it's totally different. They don't have guns. And by the way, you know, when we talk about the police department, would you ask them to check their guns outside? It makes me very nervous having my back towards them and they have their guns on. Why do they you allow them to wear their guns in here? So, here's the problem, folks. You can play this game over and over. You can have studies done. But the bottom line, and this is not rocket science, is the community does not trust your police department. And the police department has to work on it, and it's going to take years, not months, years to get that trust back. And it's not going to be by PR, and it's not going to be on you telling us how wonderful they are, or some study telling us how wonderful they are. It's going to be when the child looks at a policeman and is not afraid. That's when you have community policing. And we don't have that now. We have children that are terrified of our police force.
Hey, thank you. I think I'll let you go to Wilson High School and propose that they get rid of their school resource officer. You go ahead, please.
That was on call for.
Go ahead,
that
please.
Was on call for.
Yes, go ahead, please.
That was on call for.
Mr. Walsh,
I want an apology.
No, you're done.
Apology
Mr. Walsh.
Right now.
No.
Apology.
No, sir.
Right now. That was
no.
on call for.
No.
Who the hell do you think you are?
I'm the police commissioner. Thank you. Go ahead,
yes,
please.
And you're doing a lousy job.
Your opinion. Go ahead, Mr. Entwistle.
My name is Stephen Entwistle. Lifelong resident of Portland, Oregon, 55 years. I'm a member of Individuals for Justice, and I agree with Joe that that was an uncalled for statement. And also, we got to understand where policing was born out of. Policing was born out of chasing runaway slaves. Okay, that's where policing, modern-day policing, started. We, ramping up a drug war, okay, it's not a good idea. Chasing after people smoking marijuana, cannabis, pot, reefer, it's not a good idea either. We tried that years ago here in Portland, and guess what we found out? We found out that it increases crime, which means you have to hire more police. Oh, wow. And that's what we're here for, right, today? We got 900 officers on the streets or in the bureau. I see as the crime rate's down. I think you've exaggerated a lot of this crime. I think we've got a lot of scared little men trying to build up this police force that doesn't need to be built up. It needs to be taken down. We need to take a smarter approach, okay? And that's not the case. We're just going the same old here with this, with every other city doing the same thing. Portland's no different than any other city in this nation. And my question to the president of the police bureau is what is it going to take to just for him to just come out in public and say, hey, that this officer is out of here? What's it going to take? What's it going to take? Shooting in the back doesn't work. Shooting him seven times doesn't work. You know, what's it going to take? We just got a good old buddy system of prosecutors, city attorneys, and police bureau and the union, all together, watching each other's back, saving each other's jobs. To me, that's disgusting. And I think the public, the informed public, agrees with me on this. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks. Next.
Class 2 signed up are, I believe it's Marla Viani, Riviere, and Daryl Turner.
Come on up, please. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you. Thank you again for your service. I appreciate it, as many of the people that I spoke to over the last 6 or 7, 8, 9 days. As a member of the COAB committee, I appreciate being able to serve fellow Portlanders, and I take it very seriously. I don't really enjoy coming in these sorts of forums, but given the service, it's what I have to do. I hope you can appreciate my position. While the Portland Police Bureau announces its demonstration to proactively conduct community outreach in the planning and the delivery of its services, and this may certainly be the case in the instance of the Z-Man Foundation, as I heard over the 4 or 5 days that I was in the streets and talking to well over 150 families. That was the name that I heard the most. And in fact, Commander Urahara, his name came up with a warmth in people's hearts. And I'm inspired by that. And I hope the COAB can move forward with that sort of relationship being built between the PPB and the COAB. However, the COAB CEOS, which is the Community Engagement Outreach Subcommittee, was patently shut out, ignored, and dismissed not only by the PPB, but as well the COCAL during the 6-day planning phase of the PPB sponsored, as announced by the PPB public hearing. Evidently, the PPB is incapable or at least unwilling to collaboratively work harmoniously with the CEOS of the COAB. This continued pattern of saying one thing and wholly doing another whilst targeting and shooting blame and shame at others serves no good to the public, the process, or any real effective sense of procedural justice. I implore you, as our collective representatives, to begin to make, implement, and maintain standards which reflect a willingness to change, a commitment to not only to the settlement and the responsibilities in the settlement agreement alone, but those which foster the full and thriving development and expression of each of us. When I learned the City Council has habitually ignored the auditor's reports, and that somehow, since the city has ignored and devalued the important work they, the auditors, perform on behalf of Portlanders, I can only wonder about the operational functionality of the city. The question and focus becomes for me, because certainly I will not even begin to imagine the city won't accept responsibility, but rather, not only what can I do as an individual COAB member, but simply as a Portlander. I think a lot of the stories that get lost, or the element of the story that gets lost in all of the spectrums that we hear, is the trauma and the tragedy. And one of the elements, the key elements of the design that the CEOS came up with, was designed to address that and to bring everybody involved together in a way that we could begin to move forward, looking towards outcomes and not looking towards the past. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Make one observation. I really appreciate you taking the time to come share your thoughts. You got my attention when you said that we've, quote, habitually ignored auditors' recommendations. And this is not the right setting, but I think all of us would be very interested in knowing what specific recommendations from which auditor you believe we either gave short shrift to or you think we should take up. And again, this is not the right place for that, but I hope you'll share, you'll go a little deeper on that and give us the full benefit of your thoughts on that question.
Of course, I appreciate you asking me, and I will attend to that. I and we will attend to that.
Thank you.
Good, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Could you give me your name again, please?
Yes, I'm Mila Viani Riviere.
Thank you very much. And I was going to echo Commissioner Fisher's question on the audits, because he and I both participated in insisting on the auditor's report being heard and acted on in 2010. We then had another hearing in 2012, and my understanding is we are waiting for the new audit. The previous auditor wanted some more time to do some more work. So I am certainly very open to our new auditor, who seems very proactive and who has highlighted some of the issues with Independent Police Review and others, bringing those to our attention. And if you'd be willing to make an appointment to talk with myself and Dora Perry, who's helping me with my office's responsibility with the Department of Justice settlement and the fact that all five members of the council are responsible for making sure that it's implemented, I'd be very grateful to listen to your wisdom and to hear some of the work that the co-op has been doing and how I might be helpful in furthering that. I know it's been really challenging with the speed of the settlement having set such an aggressive timeline at a time where you're still trying to get to know each other or understand what the responsibility is. I don't think you've even had the formal training yet. So I really appreciate all of the work that you and your fellow Community Oversight Advisory Board members have been taking, and I pledge to you that I'm going to do more to further the work that you do.
Thank you. I welcome the invitation. I will get in touch with you.
If you could just stop by my office and make an appointment, that would be really great.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mayor.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz. I'm Darrell Turner, Portland Police Association President. Mayor Hales, our police commissioner, has highlighted the city's strong revenue forecast and resulting need to invest in additional city revenue and basic services. One of those core basic services is policing. While I applaud the Matrix Consulting Group's recommendation to add rank-and-file police officers, detectives, and sergeants, I believe that the Portland Police Bureau, to the Portland Police Bureau, I believe the recommendation doesn't go far enough. Among other things, the city has prioritized implementation of the Department of Justice settlement agreement, including ensuring that we have a robust response to mental health calls, community policing and community engagement, and addressing the very, very, very important and dangerous spike in gang violence during the first quarter of this year. To do these things, we need to have adequate staffing. We are severely understaffed. In 14 years ago, in 2001, the city had a population of 536,240 residents. We had 1,049 sworn police officers, which is about 1.96 sworn officers per 1,000. As of 2013, a population of about 592,120 with 944 sworn officers, we are now at about 1.59 officers per 1,000. During that same time, self-initiated activity has gone down annually 20,000. Self-initiated calls are those situations where police officers actively address enforcement issues such as car prowls, car thefts, bike thefts, things to that nature. In other words, the number of times officers are able to proactively serve our community has dropped at 10% annually. And that's a large part of part due to reduced staffing. Fewer officers means fewer opportunities for proactive policing. In sum, since 2001, the city population has grown over 10%, yet we've lost over 10% of our ranks and our proactive policing by 10% a year. That is a very disturbing trend. The city is getting bigger, the police bureau is getting smaller, and less able to serve the community in a way that we believe the community should be served. That trend is even more troubling when we compare our city to the rest of the nation. In 2010, the FBI published a report that indicated that the national average for cities with a population over 250,000 was 2.7 officers per 1,000 of the population. By contrast, the city of Portland currently is at 1.5, as I mentioned before, officers per 1,000 of the population. Using the national average of a city of the size of Portland, we would need over 1,600 sworn police officers. We are not advocating for that many police officers. We currently have closer to 900 rank-and-file officers, however. In other words, each of us would have to have an average staffing to build up to 700 more officers, again, which we're not asking for. What we're asking is that you look at the staffing study, but also look at these other numbers and make recommendations to hire more police officers over the next 5 years than just the 23 positions that are advocated for. Thank you.
Questions?
Turner, three quick questions because we have a lot of people.
Sure, I understand that, sure.
Matter. Number one, were you interviewed by Matrix?
No, I was not.
Did you ask to be?
Yes, I did. I did. I talked to the chief of police at the time and asked to be if we could be part of the process, and